Get started on John 11. This is one of my favorite chapters in the entire Bible. And there's a lot of insights to it, but let's get started. We're going to go down to verse 45 tonight, and that's where we'll end with the raising of Lazarus. Someone start us out, and let's read the first two verses of chapter 11 of John. Anybody?
Now a man was named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus was now sick, was the same one who poured the perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sister sent word to Jesus.
Okay, let's stop there. Jesus, in his ministry, had no home. Remember, he mentioned one time in Matthew that everybody had a home. He didn't even have a place to lay his head. So there was something that was very meaningful for the hospitality of Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And so Jesus certainly enjoyed going, spending time. Us who have traveled a lot in work or whatever, know you always yearn to get back home, to get comfortable, get in your own bed, your own surroundings. So we can see that Jesus had a very special relationship with these three people. And if he had a home, he always felt comfortable and felt very good about going to Bethany. So he's off preaching. And then somebody pick up with verse 3, please.
So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Continue.
No, let's stop there. So Lazarus is very ill. The first thing the sisters think of course, is to send for Jesus and let him know that Lazarus, is his good friend, is sick. Now, normally, what do you think would have happened under these circumstances? Yeah. If you had a phone call, if you had a message that somebody that you love dearly was sick, generally speaking, you'd drop everything and get there as quick as you could. So here's the sister send words that Lazarus is very, very sick. And Jesus says something very interesting. "The sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified in him." We'll come back to this passage. All right, somebody pick up with verse 5.
Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. When therefore he heard that he was sick, he stayed then 2 days longer in the place where he was.
Okay. Boy, John is pulling this story out piece by piece, isn't he? John's the only one that deals with the raising of Lazarus. The other three chose not to put it in their Gospels. So to John, again, who had the privilege after 40 years, 50 years of writing whatever he wanted to, he certainly draws this story out. So here's Jesus. He gets the words that Lazarus is sick. Then he stays 2 days longer, meaning that he was busy, but that he could have really left immediately, but he stayed 2 days longer. Keep reading.
Is it true? The irony of this is that Bethany is only about 2 miles from Jerusalem.
Yeah, but he's not in Jerusalem.
No, he's not. But
yeah.
Bethany.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, Bethany's where Lazarus. Yeah, yeah, he's over in Galilee.
Right.
Yeah, we'll see that in just a few minutes.
I was thinking it was such a short distance away from him.
Yeah.
Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking..."
Okay, let's stop there for a second. I want to move back up. When Jesus did not immediately take off to go see Lazarus, what do you think the disciples thought? Pardon? Okay, they might have thought he wasn't that sick. What else do you think went through their mind? Yeah, I think they were amazed. I think they sat here and thought, well, why aren't you doing something? I mean, after all, this is, quote, your best friend. Why aren't you doing it? What other time in the Gospel of John early did the disciples have some of the same questions of why Jesus did not react or act to a specific thing? Does anybody know what I'm talking about?
John the Baptist.
John the Baptist, yeah. The same thing. Was they were amazed that here John the Baptist is in prison and Jesus did nothing. So we can see the disciples, they're sitting back, they're watching, they're listening, and I know that they went through, Ellen White points out, that they were absolutely amazed that he just sat there and did nothing for those 2 days. They didn't quite understand it. Okay, so let's pick back up then with verse, where were we? Verse 7.
After this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and are you going there again?"
Okay, let's stop there. Why were they surprised? In a sense, they were wondering why he didn't do anything. Then when he wants to do something, what was their reaction? Yeah, why are we going back there? Remember, they had left back there because when Jesus was at the temple, when he did the miracles, they wanted to stone him and they wanted to kill him. So here the disciples are saying, well, I know you want to go. Wonder why you haven't gone. But now we're going. Why do you want to go? So they're confused. Now Jesus says something in verse 9. Somebody read 9 and 10 and then somebody explain to me exactly what does he mean.
Jesus,
go ahead, Krista.
Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It is when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light."
Okay. Now, someone interpret that for me. Here that Jesus, they say to Jesus, "Well, why are we going back there? After all, they wanted to kill you." And then Jesus says, well, isn't there just 12 hours in a day? If you walk in the daytime, you got light. And if you walk at nighttime, you stumble. So what in the world does this mean and what does this have to do with this conversation?
I think back then there was no such thing as clocks with a certain number of minutes in a clock. But the time was judged from sundown to sunset and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And it was divided up into 12 hours. So that there were 12 hours of light, no matter how many minutes was in there, it was 12 hours of dark. Now, Jesus got two different stories there because everybody would know that when you have the daylight, you work. When it gets dark, they didn't have the electric lights and all this kind of stuff. So when it got dark, you went to bed. And consequently, Jesus, I think, was telling them, hey, I have a job to do, and it's daylight. I'm going to finish the work while it's light.
Okay. Any other comments? Could it be that Jesus is saying, I'm in control. I know what I'm doing. I have, and Leroy's right, I have work to do, but everything will be in a progression that I'm in control and the work will be done. Also, I think there's an underlying where he's talking spiritually. You must always walk in the sunshine. Who gives the sunshine? Who is the sunshine?
Jesus
Himself. And if you walk in the darkness, spiritually, what does that mean?
You're dead.
Or you're stumbling, you're going to be falling. Why? Because you don't have Christ in your life. So here Jesus is trying to get some points across to the disciples. I'm in control. I only have 12 hours to do what I must do, and I will get it done, but I'm in control of what will happen. Verse 11.
After he had said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up."
Okay, let's stop here. Good news or bad news?
They
thought it was
good
news. Yeah, because how did they interpret that?
It's getting better.
Yeah, resting peacefully. How's so-and-so doing? Oh, they're doing good. They're asleep, resting peacefully. Why does Jesus, especially with John, he points this out? He points it out with Nicodemus, where Jesus makes a statement that is misunderstood right off the bat. John points this out with the woman at the well, where he makes a statement and she misrepresents it right off the bat. And the same thing here with the disciples another time. Well, Lazarus is asleep. And they immediately think, well, that's good. Why does he do this? I mean, there's a pattern there, so he has to be doing it on purpose.
Good attention getter.
Okay. What else?
I think maybe to show that that you have to know Jesus to understand what he's saying.
Okay. Any other reasons? Both of those are correct and good.
That's how he teaches.
Yeah, I think. One of the things as sales trainer, one of the first things you teach people is get the other person involved. So I think there's a technique where he makes a statement, you must be born again, or about water with the woman, that it immediately draws them into a conversation. And then he seems to take that and move it over to the point that he's really interested in getting. So he says, our friend Lazarus is asleep. Well, that's good. Well, no, it isn't. Keep reading. Start with 11, then let's pick its story back up.
After he had said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus.
Now, pick up verse 12.
His disciples replied, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better. Jesus had been speaking of his death. But his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and for your sake I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him.
Okay, let's stop there. So the disciples assumed he was going to recover. And then John asked that Jesus spoke plainly and said to them, Lazarus is dead, but I am glad for your sake. Now, what do you think the disciples thought of this statement? Pardon?
They probably said, what?
Yeah. I mean, they had to be mystified. They didn't catch on to what was happening, I don't believe. But why does Jesus do this?
It's like a heads up. It's a heads up for the fact that they're actually there learning that he's dead. He's letting them know, I know this. This is for our benefit. It's a heads up.
Okay, very good. It's exactly right. He wants to make a point. The point is the resurrection of Lazarus. So he sets the table to build the ending. Have you ever seen a speaker that builds the table all the time and then gets to the ending and it doesn't come off, or he doesn't get time to get to the ending? See? Jesus is a master at setting the table. Now, here's a question. Does he do this in our lives? All the time. Jesus very seldom ever leads us from point A to point B to point C to point D. To get us to D, he sometimes takes us to L, M, X, Y, and Z. It's like I said to prayer at prayer meeting, and I was very, very serious. There's a certain situation in our life that will remain nameless, and I keep saying to God, I got the message. I understand. Do something. And God just looks at me and just smiles and says, I don't really think you have the message yet, because he isn't taking the problem away. But this is the way he works. If things were so simple, he'd take us from A right to D. But would we learn anything? Well, we're going to see in this chapter what people learn from something that you think would seem so obvious that you could only come to one conclusion. But we'll see. Then Jesus therefore said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead, and I'm glad for your sake that I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him. Thomas, one of the disciples called Didymus, a lot of times they had Greek names, they had Latin names, they had all kinds of names, same person, said to his fellow disciples, let us go that we may die with him. Now, who's the him he's talking about?
Jesus.
Okay, so what is Thomas saying?
He said, tried to stone you when you was there before, so let's go and get it over with.
Yeah. Doesn't that sound nice? Doesn't that sound brave? What happened when Jesus faced death? He ran. Boy, those words are easy to say. Boy, if I was just there, here's what I would do. So here's Thomas saying, well, let's go to Jerusalem. Let's get down there by Bethany, and we'll all just die with him. Well, he had his opportunity. By the way, quicker than he thought. Verse 17. Somebody.
On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother.
Okay, let's stop there. Now, this is what Leroy brought up. Why in the world would John throw in that Bethany's 2 miles from Jerusalem?
To show that he could easily have gone.
Well, he's over in Galilee, so he's coming over. See, the reason being was, and you have to understand the way that the Jews mourn. In fact, my funeral is going to be kind of like the Jews. I've already told Sue. Tell them what I've told you.
Hire some wailers.
Yeah.
They want them on the first two rows.
First two rows of the church will be professional hired wailers who will sit there and say, oh, Ernie, how could you do this and leave us? You don't think I'm kidding?
No.
I'm not kidding. I don't want happiness. I don't want a party. I don't want people. So I want people bawling and crying. I want to be missed. So Sue has promised that she will take care of that and make sure. Well, the Jews did about the same. The reason that John throws this in was there were many of the religious leaders, the Pharisees, and a lot of the Jews, according to the custom, they would come over and sit in the home, and they would wail, cry, bemoan, show their sympathy, sometimes for 3 days, sometimes for 4 days, sometimes for 7 days. So this was just a custom that you just sat there and cried and bawled and screamed. And so the reason John throws this in, as we'll see, it does make a difference. There were a lot of the religious leaders and people. So from all accounts, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus must have been somewhat known. So many of the leaders came over. So they're all there in Bethany. Okay, somebody read verse 30. Or 20, I'm sorry, 20. Can't see. Verse 20.
When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Okay, let's stop there. Martha was always a person of action. Remember when Jesus came to visit, it's Martha that's cleaning the house, doing the floor, wiping, dusting, doing all the crazy things women do when they think they have company and everybody's going to look at their house. Mary, who was always the quiet one, the thankful one, who sat there. So right here, we see the same thing. As soon as they hear Jesus is in the area, Martha's the one that jumps up and she runs out. Now, she says a very interesting thing. Hello, Jesus. If you would have been here, my brother wouldn't have died. How do you interpret that statement?
Why didn't you come when we called you?
How do y'all interpret it?
It's your fault.
Disappointed. Yeah.
I think it's
a true statement?
Yeah.
True statement, but how do you think she meant it?
To their aid, to help.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's certainly a truth, but not meant in a positive way. Because she had to be disappointed that he didn't come. So he says, Lord, if you'd have been here, my brother would not have died. Read verse 22.
Even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you.
Okay. So she's making a statement. If you'd have been here, wouldn't have happened. However, I know who you are, and if you ask of God. So she still has faith. She still has hope. But she shows the human part by saying, where were you? Jesus said to her, your brother shall rise again. Good news or bad news?
Good news.
Good news. But how does she take it?
Like in the resurrection.
Yeah, read verse 24.
Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day.
Okay. Then somebody read 25.
Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?
Okay. Very powerful, powerful words right there. I am the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me shall live even if he dies. Isn't that the hope that we have of eternity? Is that we are connected to the resurrection and the life. God is not as concerned about the first death as he is the spiritual death. And we must always keep that in mind. His goal is for us to spend eternity with Him. And remember, that's why sometimes we go from A to M to Z to L to get to D. Because His goal is much different sometimes than what our goal. So He says to Martha, I am the resurrection. Then He says something very interesting. Do you believe? Right to the point. She said to Him, yes, Lord. I have believed that You are the Christ, the Son of God, even He who comes into the world. And when she said this, she went away and called Mary her sister, saying secretly. Why was it secretly? What is everybody else doing?
Wailing.
They're wailing. So if you have a message to give to Sue during my funeral, it's going to be secretly, because we're going to have people wailing. The teacher is here and is calling for you. And when she heard it, she arose quickly and went out to Jesus. Now, here's an interesting thing. Jesus came near the home of Lazarus. Why didn't He go to the home of Lazarus?
That's not where Lazarus was.
One. What else?
Well, these were the people who were trying to kill Him.
Some of them. We'll certainly see where that plays.
Opposed to the question.
Why didn't Jesus go? He went and stopped away from the home of Lazarus and Mary and Martha. Why didn't He go to the home where they were?
Because of all the wailers.
Wailers, part of it.
He wanted them to come to Him.
Absolutely. Never underestimate how Jesus worked to get people's attention. Because, somebody read on, verse 30.
Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met Him.
Okay, keep going.
When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there.
Okay, read the next one.
When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw Him, she fell at His feet and said, Lord, if You had been here, my brother would not have died.
Okay, now do you get the picture? Who's in control?
He is.
He is. Very, very important. If He would have went to the house, how much control would He have had? None. He stays away. Martha comes out the scene. John very deliberately says Jesus was at the same place. He never moved. So now the scene shifts. Mary gets up to come. And all the wailers and the mourners say, well, she must be going to the gravesite to cry, so let's go with her. So all of a sudden, when she gets to Jesus and stops, here's the crowd. Jesus is in control. Now, what question did Mary ask? Now, what's the coincidence that the question would be the same between the two women? So what would you take from this? They both see Jesus and they both say the same thing. Okay. One answer.
They had talked about it.
Yeah, they had been talking about it. And you, what do you think they were saying?
Why doesn't He come?
Try. What would you be saying? If you were sick, your wife was sick, your son was sick, your brother was sick, and you knew there was someone that had power, what would you be sitting around saying?
It's the same thing everybody says at tragic death. It's why and
The,
if only.
The question is eternal. Where is God? We ask the same question today. Well, where is God? So they were sitting there saying, where is he? Why isn't he here? I thought he loved us. And so the first thing on their mind when they see Jesus is, well, I know if you'd have been... They're too kind to say, what in the world happened? If I know you'd have been here, this wouldn't have happened. So this was what they were talking about. This is what was on their mind. Therefore, when Mary came to Jesus, she saw him, fell at his feet, saying, Lord, if you'd have been here, my brother would not have... Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. What does your version say on that last sentence?
Mine says the same thing.
Okay.
Mine says stern and in spirit and deeply moved.
Okay, about the same. Anybody have anything else?
Mine said he chafed in spirit.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. What do you? How do you interpret chafed?
Well, the commentary on the bottom of mine says stirred with indignation, probably with the power of death.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else have anything else? Chafe is the closest. Okay. Some of the versions have chafed. Which is your version?
Family Bible,
okay. Moffat has. It kind of insinuates that Jesus was unhappy. So, I did what I do best. Go to the Greek, which means I don't read it. I just find other people who have read it. And it says very definitely that this was, Jesus was moved. He felt empathy. But I don't think it's for what most of us think he did, so we're going to read on, then we're going to come back up. He was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? Then they said to him, Lord, come and see. Verse 35, Jesus wept. Here we see Mary weeping. We see the wailers wailing, the mourners mourning. Jesus says, where is Lazarus? Where have you put him? And then he wept. What was he weeping for?
The unbelief.
Why would you say that?
They basically said, it's your fault that he's dead. Here he is coming to, raise him from the dead. He's trying to finish the table.
Okay. Scene, if you will. Okay. So let me go back next. Unbelief of who?
Mainly his closest intimates.
Okay.
Okay. People he thought would
okay.
know him more than anyone.
Okay. Any other ideas? Well, let's do some process of elimination. Was he weeping for Lazarus?
No.
Why? Pardon? Okay. Was he weeping for Mary and Martha's sorrow? Why? They believed and they questioned. But what was going to happen in just a few seconds? Pardon?
They believed that he was going to do something.
Okay. But what was going to happen in a few seconds? Or minutes? Their sorrow's over with. So who was he weeping for?
For the Jews. For us. Forever.
One of my favorite Bible commentators says that as Jesus looked over that crowd, which he was getting ready to give his defining miracle, some of the very same people there were going to be the ones to call and for him to be crucified. And some of the very same people that were getting ready to see his crowning miracle were going to be destroyed in AD 70 when Jerusalem was destroyed. And he looked over that mass of humanity. This is why John is very careful to say we're only 2 miles from Jerusalem, because these people were here. The leaders of the people, the Pharisees, people that were out here were there. And as Jesus looked over that crowd and saw that these very same people that are going to see a magnificent work of God within minutes, we're going to call to crucify him. We're going to be the ones that would die in Jerusalem in AD 70. It became too much for him, and this is what caused him to weep. What does that tell you how much your Savior, your God, loves each one of us? That in the midst of this whole thing, his heart went out, not to the immediate problem. He was taking care of the immediate problem. But as he saw down the road, as he made his appeal, that these would be the people that would crucify him, and that these would be the people that destroyed. And this is what moved him. And this is why he wept. Those two words are very, very powerful. Jesus wept. To the Greeks, and remember the Bible was written in Greek, God showed no emotion. Their God showed no emotion whatsoever. So it was absolutely unbelievable that any God would show emotion, let alone any God ever weep. And so this sentence blew their mind. And so the Jews were saying, behold how he loved him. So they see him weeping. They're moved to say, boy, did he must have really loved Lazarus. But some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of him who was blind have kept this man also from dying? So see, you always have the naysayers. You always have the negative people. Here he is talking to the ones he loved. He's weeping. Some say, boy, he must have really loved Lazarus. Another said, well, you could have prevented all this.
It is a logical question.
Absolutely. Sure. Certainly. Very logical. Here again, let's not be hard on these people. Meaning your work you've already mentioned. How many times have you heard people say, where is God? Where was God? What's he doing? So these people are no different. Verse 38. Jesus therefore, again being deeply moved, because he heard this conversation, he could read their thoughts, came to the tomb. Now it was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, remove the stone. Why did Jesus wait 4 days before he came to Lazarus?
Why not 3 days? Well,
Why not 5 days? Why four? It is significant. Anybody know?
So that there would be no doubt.
There were some. You had Sadducees who didn't believe in any resurrection. You had some Pharisees and some Jewish people who said after 3 days, you're really dead, and the spirit goes off somewhere, leaves the body, but there's no doubt you're dead. And so Jesus, as He always did since this was His crowning miracle, He waited till the fourth day, so there was absolutely no qualms that He was dead. And we'll see what Mary said. He says, remove the stone. And Martha, the sister of the deceased, said, Lord, by this time there will be a stench, for He has been dead 4 days. So she... Pardon? Yeah, very practical. She says, what she's really saying is, Lord, don't embarrass us. Our Lord, we're going to take the stone away and going to be dead. Isn't that right, Sue? So He said, take away the stone and He's going to stink. Now, is there any doubt when people heard this that He'd been dead 4 days? No. Very, very important. Jesus said to her, did I not say to you, if you believed, you will see the glory of the Lord? Is He kind of reminding her? Yeah. Just a nice little jab. And so they removed the stone. Jesus raised His eyes and said, somebody read Jesus' prayer, verse 41.
Jesus looked up.
Go ahead, Deanna.
And Jesus lifted up His eyes and said, Father, I thank You that You have heard me. Yes, I know You always hear and listen to me. But I have said this on account of and for the benefit of the people standing around, so that they may believe that You did send me.
Okay, let's
me Your messenger.
Okay, very good. How do you interpret this prayer?
Well, He's also dealing with very legalistic people. They're, you know, they're point by point by point. So not only does He have confirmation from the sister that the brother's been dead for four days, but He's also saying, He's also making a statement so that people will know what He has said, so it can be retold again and again.
What made the Jews the most mad that Jesus did?
He was God, the Son of God.
Yeah. Every time He said He was the Son of God, they got mad, called Him blasphemy. Now look what He's doing. He's saying in His prayer, Father, I thank Thee that Thou hast heard me, and I know that Thou hearest me always, but because the people standing here, because of the people standing around, I said it, that they may believe that Thou didst send me. He is putting everything on the table right here. No pretenses. The people are standing around. They're wondering, what in the world are You going to do? And He prays to His Father and says, You have sent me and You have given me the power to do, to glorify exactly what's going to happen. Now, can you get any plainer than that? No. And when He had said those things, He cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. He who had died came forth, bound hand and foot with wrappings, and His face was wrapped around with a cloth. And Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go. Many therefore of the Jews who had come to Mary and beheld what had done believed in him. But some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the things which Jesus had done. Now my question this evening is, how could anybody be there and not believe? How do you rationalize that? What else could Jesus have done to try to bring a message of who he was to these people? I don't know of anything.
Well, this was also a prerequisite for his resurrection. Mm-hmm. Had to see this over there for them to see it over there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it has a lot of implications. Number one, what does it give us hope for our loved ones who have passed on? That Jesus will stand there and say, Mary, John, Joe, whatever, come forth. He has that power. Has the power of his own resurrection. Which, by the way, is just in a few days. Remember, this is right at the end.
They were already in that set mind that we've seen before.
Yeah.
Where no amount of reasoning
for yeah. It's absolutely unbelievable. So this is why he waited. This was his crowning act. That's why he waited 4 days. Can you imagine what it did for the disciples? You would think everything. But what happens in about a week?
They all ran.
They all ran. They're all scared. They're all hiding. And they've all given up.
Including the one that was going to go with him and die.
That's right. Who was the very one that said, I'll go die with you, said, well, unless I put my fingers in his holes of his hands, I won't even believe. Can you imagine? No wonder Jesus wept. We often wonder in our lifetime why some are healed and why some are not healed. Sometimes healing does absolutely nothing for people. Sometimes miracles are not the answer. You would think that if Jesus came and performed some great miracle, that as Rob Shepherd likes to point out, he's into the universe now, and I have an appreciation of it, but not like that. But he says, what if on the Sabbath all the stars aligned together in heaven and said, God is Lord of the Sabbath, the seventh day? Wouldn't that be marvelous? What if the ark was found tomorrow? Wouldn't change a thing. The people that were wondering about Jesus and was leaning his way, they were moved by this. People that didn't like him, didn't faze them one bit.
There is a lesson in that. I mean, other than the obvious things we're studying here, that is that human nature is such that our this is a progressive thing. It's a progression of thought processes where they cut off accepting things that were so clear
all on the way to that, it's just like people deceiving themselves. In the long run, when something is very open and clear.
Yeah.
And it goes the other way, too,
mm-hmm.
where you accept things that you believe are true gradually. I mean, it doesn't happen all at once. Either way.
Mm-hmm. Physical evidence, miracles, healings, all of this, if you don't know Jesus, if your heart is not touched by Him, will not give any evidence that you'll move in that direction. But my, how Jesus tried the very best He could with this miracle, with bringing back Lazarus. You think it would have approached, but did not too much for the disciple. John does have some belief, so it did move some in the right direction. And for that, I know that Jesus had to be very, very thankful.
Well, this is a paradigm shift. This isn't just a one incident. This is a holographic experience throughout your whole beingness.
Mm-hmm.
Your whole heart has to, your whole perception has to change. It's not just this one little thing.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. What do you think the people thought when Lazarus walked around with around there?
There had to have been some level of awe and fear.
Should have been. Do you know? We'll find out in next week or whenever we do the next part of John. They people not only wanted to kill Jesus, they wanted to kill Lazarus. Do you see what sin does? Sin is irrational. A lady by the name of Ellen White said, if you can explain sin, then you can excuse it. And that's a true statement. How could people, when they saw this miracle, and Lazarus is there among them, they get so mad they want to kill Jesus, which they do, and they want to kill Lazarus. Instead of rejoicing. But this is what sin does. It's a powerful chapter. It has lots of implications in it. It's a chapter that we tend to look at and just see a nice resurrection and a nice story. But there's much more to that. And I hope the next time that you hear Jesus wept, that you will have an insight of how much when Jesus was on this earth, He cared spiritually about His people. Because as He looked and saw the very people that He was appealing to, giving this miracle, giving a prayer, can't you see who I am? They would look at this and plot to kill Him and would follow out with that plot. And the end result, they would be killed in AD 70. That's the way God is. All He wants us to do is spend eternity with Him. Father in heaven, Jesus wept. What an insight with those two words into Your character. But as we look throughout the entire Bible, we see where You wept in heaven as Lucifer went into rebellion. We can only imagine the sorrow You had in Garden of Eden. Wednesday night we talked about Jeremiah where You said the tears ran down Your face. We talked about Hosea, where You cried as You said, how can I give You up? And again we see, as You looked over the multitude, as You were going to get ready to bring Lazarus back to life, You saw the sadness of Your children that would reject You. Help us, Father, to have a day-to-day relationship with You. Help us not to disappoint You, but help us as we know You more and more every day, we draw closer and closer to You and become like You. And one day, You'll come again to take us home. But the most beautiful thing, and I think about my daddy, I think about other people, they think about their loved ones. With my daddy, You'll say, Reuben, come forth. What a father You are. What a God you are. Help us to be faithful. In Jesus' name, amen.